From Swarthmore College.
From Swarthmore College,
This is
War News Radio.
I'm Eliana Biscard Church.
And I'm Cristina Avellan Matamoros.
This week on War News Radio, big decisions. We hear about the Obama administration trying Guantanamo detainees in military commissions.
Then we analyze media coverage of NATO attacks in Libya.
Finally, we hear about the controversies surrounding BaseTrack, an experimental media project in southern Afghanistan.
But first, a roundup of this week's news.
Nine people were killed in a series of separate attacks in Iraq. Azwat al-Iraq news agency reports that gunmen attacked police in Mosul, the capital of the northern province Nineveh, killing two. Outside the city of Kirkuk, a roadside IED killed one Iraqi army patrol soldier and wounded two others. Six family members were killed, and at least two more were wounded when gunmen burst into their home in a predominantly Sunni neighborhood on the southern outskirts of Baghdad. Security sources say that the family is related to a university professor who was assassinated by gunmen last year.
Two Muslim clerics were arrested this week for leading prayer and protest in Kurdistan, northern Iraq's semi-autonomous region. They are only two of over 100 Kurdish citizens arrested since demonstrations began in February. Meanwhile, protesters are demanding the immediate resignation of Kurdistan's regional government, which is notorious for corruption, nepotism, and insufficient services. The democratically elected government, led by President Masoud Barzani, has enacted some reforms, but refuses to leave office. Instead, the authorities have been cracking down. Nine people have been killed so far, including two members of the security forces, though the protest leadership has been urging for peaceful tactics.
A protest in northern Afghanistan over a recent U.S. Quran burning quickly turned violent on Friday. At least seven foreigners were killed after demonstrators attacked a U.N. office. The protest was in response to a video posted by Terry Jones, a preacher in Florida, who filmed himself burning a Quran on a grill last month. When Jones announced his intentions to burn the Quran last September, he backed down after receiving heavy criticism from other religious leaders and the Obama administration. He received little media attention, however, after executing his plans last month. The protests in Afghanistan began with speeches against Jones, but escalated as crowds became larger and more violent.
The U.S. announced a $50 million donation to the High Peace Council, a body within the Afghan government working towards reconciliation with the Taliban. Mohammad Massoum Stanikzai, the secretary of the High Peace Council, told reporters that the government and the Taliban are in a developing dialogue. Each side has sent representatives to meet, and the Afghan government expressed its dedication to coordinate a peaceful compromise with the Taliban. Stanikzai acknowledged American financial support, but stressed that this process is Afghan-led and initiated.
Afghan President Hamid Karzai has ordered an investigation after six Afghan citizens were killed this week during a joint International Security Assistance Force, ISAF, and Afghan Special Forces raid. ISAF forces maintain that all six slain were insurgents, and the four other captured during the operation are suspected as such. The local governor of Daripol province, however, claims that only one insurgent was among the dead, and the remaining five were all civilians. Karzai, who frequently criticizes foreign troops for civilian casualties, has authorized Governor Ramadi to probe deeper into the incident.
The looming potential U.S. government shutdown does not bode well for military servicemen and women. Although the Pentagon claims that a government shutdown would not harm military efforts in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, or Japan, AP reports that troops will not receive paychecks for the following week. It is unclear whether or not the military personnel will be paid retroactively for time served during the funding lapse.
The German government has denied asylum to Andre Shepard, an American soldier who deserted the army in 2007, to avoid being deployed to Iraq for a second tour. Shepard spent part of 2004 and early 2005 in Iraq as a helicopter mechanic. Shepard was based in Germany when he learned that his unit would be deployed to Iraq again. He then went into hiding for more than 18 months, aided by peace groups. Shepard resurfaced in 2008 and applied for asylum in Germany, arguing that if he was sent to Iraq, he would have to participate in war crimes against his will. However, the German government rejected Shepard's application because he could not give specific examples of war crimes he had been forced to commit during his first tour in Iraq. Many anti-war advocates were watching Shepard's case closely, as he is the first American deserter who has applied for asylum in Europe.
General David Petraeus, former commanding officer in Iraq, is due to leave his current post as commander of American forces in Afghanistan this fall. NPR reported this week that he is being seriously considered for CIA chief, replacing Leon Panetta. The current second-in-command in Afghanistan, Marine Lieutenant General John Allen, is expected to take Petraeus' place. This is War News Radio. Almost 10 years after the September 11 terrorist attacks, the U.S. government has still not tried the men they say plotted the attack. Trials might start soon, but not in the way many expected. Sam Hirschman has more on the Obama administration's change in policy.
One of President Obama's first acts in office was to order the closing of the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center. He also promised to try some Gitmo detainees in federal court. In November 2009, Attorney General Eric Holder announced plans to hold trials in New York City for the men accused of organizing the September 11th terrorist attacks. But Holder announced a change to administration policy April 4th.
So today, I am referring the cases of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Waleed Mohammed bin Attash, Ramzi bin al-Shib, Ali Abdul Aziz Ali, and Mustafa Ahmed al-Wasawi to the Department of Defense to proceed in military commissions.
Even more confusing, Holder himself says he believes that federal courts are the best place for these trials. He blamed unjustified congressional interference for forcing the administration to abandon its original plans.
Had this case proceeded in Manhattan or in an alternative venue in the United States, as I seriously explored in the last year, I am confident that our justice system could have performed with the same distinction that has been its hallmark for over 200 years. Now, unfortunately, since I made that decision, members of Congress have intervened and imposed restrictions blocking the administration from bringing any Guantanamo detainees to trial in the United States, regardless of the venue. As the President has said, those unwise and unwarranted restrictions undermine our counterterrorism efforts and could harm our national security.
Holder's announcement answered few questions and led to many more. It is unclear when the military trials will be held and how much access the press will have. Further, critics are wondering if military commissions are a viable option for the United States in bringing terrorists to justice. Jonathan Hafitz, a law professor at Seton Hall University and author of Habeas Corpus After 9/11, Confronting America's New Global Detention System, believes the military commissions are not a good system.
I think it's an outcome that's not just and will not really be perceived as just. The commissions have improved since they started out in 2001. But they still are they're second class. I mean, they don't provide the same protections as the federal court.
Further, Hafitz says the military commissions were put in place to create an alternative and inferior system that supported some other questionable counterterrorism practices, like torture and rendition.
The commissions are courts that were set up after 9/11 hastily to try to create an inferior alternative to the criminal justice system, and ultimately to facilitate policies of arbitrary detention torture and broad assertions of executive power.
Hafez says not only were the commissions conceived for questionable ends, but also that they undermine long-established American involvement and support for international law.
The Geneva Conventions framework was established, you know, after World War II to try to prevent the types of atrocities that had gone on to be repeated. It's got, you know, virtually universal buy-in among the nations of the world. The U.S. had been a leader in terms of the Geneva Conventions. To the extent that the U.S. has kind of eroded the respect for the Geneva Conventions and tried to limit, if not avoid entirely, its obligations under the Geneva Conventions, you know, not simply through military commissions, but through extrajudicial detention, torture, and other abuses, that has undermined the international legal framework.
Hafez says the Obama administration's acceptance of military commissions may lead to their entrenchment into the American legal framework, along with indefinite detention.
You've seen a further institutionalization of practices of the Bush administration, and that the pendulum that has kind of swung in the past, you know, back and forth during times of security and times of stability has not swung back yet, and that and worse, that a lot of the sort of changes, military commissions, indefinite detention, to some extent rendition, have become permanent features of U.S. policy, and rather than a temporary exception, a new norm.
Guantanamo has proven to be a difficult problem for the Obama administration. Though President Obama has made some attempts to get away from this Bush-era holdover, indications are that he will continue to be unsuccessful. For War News Radio, I'm Sam Hirschman.
This is War News Radio. Since the start of the NATO intervention in Libya, there have been instances in which NATO forces have accidentally fired upon the Libyan rebels they have been supporting. Colin Smith takes a look at one of these misplaced attacks and the Libyan response to the resulting damage.
Libyan rebels stationed near the town of Brega were mistakenly targeted by a NATO airstrike that killed at least two Libyan rebels. The airstrike is the second deadly NATO mistake in less than a week, following another misplaced attack last Friday that left 13 rebels dead. Mistakes like these complicate an already controversial mission, but they still aren't enough to turn Libyan nationalists against their foreign allies. Though some Libyans are critical about NATO airstrikes endangering the lives of the forces they are supporting, the response from rebels have largely claimed that NATO is not doing enough. Al Jazeera reports from the site of the attack.
Even as NATO is being criticized for killing and injuring those it is meant to protect, the coalition is being pressed for even more air support. The rebels realize they can't win this battle alone.
But increased U.S. support is not as easy as it sounds. According to a Russia Today report from Tripoli, Gaddafi's forces have begun hiding within civilian populations, making it increasingly difficult for NATO to target them effectively.
Increasingly, Gaddafi has changed his tactics on the ground, so it is becoming more and more difficult for NATO pilots to actually discern on the ground who is who. And this might be part of the reason why we're seeing them starting to make mistakes, where they seemingly are targeting rebel fighters, perhaps thinking that they are Gaddafi soldiers.
For now, the rebels have accepted this increased risk. In a recent ABC report, Mustafa Gariani, the media liaison for the Libyan rebel forces, said this.
We understand that collateral damage may have taken place at some times. Looking at the big picture, sometime we may have to bomb within an area where some innocent bystand civilians may get hurt.
Unlike in Iraq and Afghanistan, where unintentional civilian deaths have bred more and more American resentment, it seems the Libyan fighters are willing to overlook collateral damage in view of their greater goal of resisting Gaddafi. However, with the situation on the Libyan front beginning to look like a stalemate, Libyans are becoming increasingly frustrated with the Western powers' inability to effectively check Gaddafi's strength. For War News Radio, I'm Colin Smith.
This is War News Radio. Whether or not you have a loved one in the military, it's difficult to imagine the daily reality for soldiers currently serving in the longest war in American history. BaseTrack, an experimental media group, has been on the ground with one U.S. Marine Corps battalion at a base in southern Afghanistan, but was shut down by the United States Marine Corps and asked to leave. With the story first aired in February, here's Eliana Bisgard-Church.
If you go to BaseTrack's Facebook page, you can meet Americans with an active investment in the war in Afghanistan. Posts from people debating the causes of the Afghan insurgency, or the WikiLeaks phenomenon, are sandwiched between posts from mothers and fathers wondering how their sons are doing. Jeff Johnson, whose son is a supply officer currently in Afghanistan, is an avid follower of BaseTrack.org and comments on its Facebook page daily.
I read many of the things that the wives and the mothers and the other family members put out there, and it gives you a perspective of, you know, my son's not really in combat, but those people, their children or their spouses are, you know, out in the field dodging bullets, and it's all out there. You can feel their anxiety. I think in that way it connects me with them.
The Facebook comments have recently centered on one topic, though. That BaseTrack, an experimental media project following the 1st Battalion, 8th Marines, or 1-8, received a letter from a public affairs officer informing them that they are, quote, being asked to leave 1-8's positions due to perceived operational security violations on portions of their website, end quote. The journalists are not formally disembedded, which would require proven security violations, but the letter specifically noted BaseTrack's use of Google Maps on their website. BaseTrack's founder, Chiru Kueyama, says that they have specifically altered the map points to be non-targetable. Uncertain about the letter's language and reasoning, Kueyama has attempted to contact public affairs, but has been unsuccessful.
The letter from the public affairs officers was certainly a surprise, saying that there's operational security violations with the BaseTrack.org website, and that the Marine Battalion didn't have the manpower or the logistical capability to accommodate us for the next few weeks. So I basically had different camps saying totally different things. It was very unclear who any of it was coming from, and my immediate response when I get this letter saying there's an OPSEC violation is to write back and say, hey, if there's an OPSEC violation, you know, let's work together and deal with it so that nobody's life is endangered, but no response at all to that. So it was really confusing.
Kueyama believes that there are other motives in place.
The most recent correspondence that I've gotten from the head of public affairs of the Marine Corps in Afghanistan is that there's no OPSEC violation. They've, you know, repeatedly said that the project has been overwhelmingly popular, and that everybody that we've worked with in the military seems to like us a lot. So my gut feeling is that someone in the Pentagon saw the BaseTrack site and really wigged out, and it's not hard for me to believe that somebody, especially maybe, you know, an older Marine, a very senior one, thought that there was an OPSEC violation, or looks at a computer screen and sees some technology that they don't really get, but they'd much rather have it just go away.
BaseTrack certainly has made an impact online. Through art, personal reflections, photos, and other media, BaseTrack has strived to connect Americans with loved ones in the service. BaseTrack's Matt Farwell wanted to bring the stories home.
The goal was to connect the families. That was one of the goals. The goal was to bring some sort of emotional connection to Americans who, you know, just kind of see the war on TV and then wonder, okay, yeah, Afghanistan war and American Idol, let's see. Okay, American Idol, right? And that's about the same level of engagement they have with it, to give them some sort of gut investment in it next time they go into a ballot box or go call their congressman or do whatever they do. And we're not trying to tell them how to think or what to think. We're just trying to tell them to think.
BaseTrack is an extremely diverse group, with members from New York to San Francisco to Hungary to Pakistan. Jeff Johnson likes the mix.
The diversity of the group of people that are involved in the media, for instance, the retired Army gentleman, Matt Farwell, you know, he gives you a perspective from the military side. The rest of them have other media backgrounds, which gives them very diverse perspectives.
Johnson says the mix of media matters as well.
To me, it's the diversity of the different media types that make the site. You know, you can see pictures, but you can also see videos, and it's very interesting to hear these young Marines that are putting themselves in harm's way, and to see and hear them. The other things that I'm really interested in are the links and the articles that the base track people connect you with to read about all aspects of the war.
Farwell is the only member with military experience. He was a U.S. Army soldier from 2005 to 2010 and served 16 months in Afghanistan during 2006 and 2007, which he says was one of the heaviest points in the conflict. He has been writing of the effects of war on returning soldiers based on personal experience.
War is a terrible thing. You go and you kill people, and people try and kill you. And that's if you're actually a frontline on-the-ground soldier. And then there are people that are outside every day, sleeping in mud, living a pretty brutal, nasty life since being back. I've had a rough time, but, you know, it's something that people need to be aware of before they really glorify and, you know, seek to label everyone a hero. That's part of what I'm trying to do, is say that, you know, the responsibility of the American citizen doesn't end with the clap and the yellow ribbon.
In addition to informing their audiences, BaseTrack members have also helped Marines more directly at times.
Obviously, we can't accommodate everybody as much as we'd like to, but if it's possible and if we can, you know, we'll say, hey, Private so-and-so, your mom says hi, or to one of the moms, that your son looks good, you know, he's dirty, but that's the way he likes it, or, you know, something like that. So a bit more of a connection that way, and a bit more of an intimate connection that way.
Farwell says resources available through BaseTrack's different pages have excited its followers.
I mean, I've been blown away by the nuanced level of discussion, intelligent comments, and, you know, back and forth of these people that have not only great emotional investment in what's going on over there, but often, you know, a completely, like, different perspective. You know, you have mothers and grandmothers and wives and sisters and brothers and veterans and, you know, everything. You really get a good perspective that I don't think you find anywhere else.
Responses to BaseTrack have been supportive and enthusiastic.
Personal responses, I've gotten quite a few, and I've developed, you know, quite a few online friendships with some of the family members and followers that just want to know a little bit more about what's going on and kind of what their sons or their family members or whoever's over there might be going through. And so I kind of share my experience, and especially my experience after coming back.
Connecting with family members speaks to the strength of the project, which has created a phenomenon Kuwayama believes will allow BaseTrack to continue.
One of the core concepts of the project, I think, bore out, which was that we weren't just embedding with the Marines themselves in Afghanistan. We were embedding with their families in a virtual space. In our case, we have a timed audience, but they're the families of the Marines that we're embedded with. And I mean, ultimately, when this whole thing was going down, and people were telling us that we were being ejected, you know, my response is always, you do whatever you have to do. You don't have to explain anything to me. You have to explain it to the wives and mothers and the families of 1,000 Marines. If you can do that, you're home free.
Johnson has enjoyed being able to see more of what the Marines are doing, but he was not very surprised at the news of the cancellation.
But I was a little bit surprised until I sat back and considered everything, and I thought, well, this event isn't all that surprising. Some of the families are devastated because it's going off the air, but I don't think it's the end of the concept.
It's done a lot of good. These other family members that are on here are just so grateful to BaseTrack. I hear them, or I see their comments. They're so grateful to BaseTrack to be in touch with their family.
The BaseTrack team will not give up easily. Next, they plan to distribute the remaining 1-8 content and plan new projects.
Once we get through this, we're back full steam to doing the thing that we set out here to do, which is actually to share photos and reports reporting with these Marine families. It doesn't look like we're going to be invited back into our previously scheduled embed, but you know, fundamentally, that's not remotely the end of the project, because in a lot of ways, the center of gravity with the project isn't actually in Afghanistan. It's in Facebook, or it's in Twitter, or it's virtual. It's the families of these Marines, not the Marines themselves. So that all continues. And right now, I've got something like half a dozen people floating around Afghanistan, Pakistan, and the United Arab Emirates, waiting to see where to go next. And there's definitely a lot of stuff happening out there. So I think that's where the project goes. We're still on the ground in Afghanistan, and I think wherever we go in Afghanistan, we're taking the families of 1,000 Marines with us.
War News Radio attempted to call the Marine Corps public affairs officer who signed the letter, which BaseTrack has published, but the phone number he provided seemed to be out of order. Though BaseTrack has not yet announced any new specifics, they have already made an impact and expect to continue to do so. You can follow them on Facebook or at basetrack.org. For War News Radio, I'm Eliana Biscard Church.
That's our show for this week.
War News Radio is a production of Swarthmore College.
Visit us online to listen to archived shows, learn more about the program, or subscribe to our podcast. That's at warnewsradio.org.
You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook to keep up with War News Radio between shows. Look for the links on our site.
Our behind-the-scenes crew this week includes Alan Zhao, Louis Katz, Rosanna Kim, Amandine Lee, Aaron Moser, Kate Aronoff, Jared Nolan, John McMinn, and our producer, Jim McMillan.
I'm Eliana Biscard Church.
And I'm Christina Avellan Matamoros. Until next time, thanks for listening.